ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवतसेवया भगवति उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी कृष्णे स्वधामोपगते धनमग्नानादिभिः सह कलौ नष्टदृशाम् एष पुराणार्कोऽधुनोदितः ग्रन्थराज श्रीमद्भागवतम् की जय. दिस् इस् केण्टो 6. We're on chapter 12, entitled Vritrasura's Glorious Death, and today's text is number 12. Kindly repeat. Avidvan evam atmanam manyate anisham ishwaram bhutaihi srijati bhutani grasate tani taihi swayam avidvan evam atmanam manyate anisham ishwaram bhutaihi srijati bhutani grasate tani taihi swayam avidvan evam atmanam manyate anisham ishwaram bhutai srijati bhutani grasate tani tai swayam avidvane vamatmanam manyate anisham ishwaram bhutai srijati bhutani grasate tani tai swayam. Avidvan evam atmanam manyate anisham ishwaram bhutaihi srijati bhutani grasate tani taihi swayam. Avidvan evam atmanam manyate anisham ishwaram bhutaihi srijati bhutani grasate tani tai swayam. Anybody else? Ladies? Avidvan evam atmanam manyate anisham ishwaram bhutai srijati bhutani grasate tani tai swayam. Avidvan, one who is foolish, without knowledge. evam, thus. Atmanam, himself, manyate, considers. Anisham, although totally dependent on others. Ishwaram, as the supreme controller, independent. Bhutehi, by the living entities. Srijati, he, the Lord, creates. Bhutani, other living entities. Grasate, he devours them. I'm sorry, he devours. Tani, them. Tehi, by other living beings. Swayam, himself. Translation. A foolish, senseless person cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although always dependent, he falsely thinks himself the Supreme. If one thinks, according to one's previous fruitive actions, one's material body is created by the father and mother, and the same body is annihilated by another agent, as another animal is devoured by a tiger, this is not proper understanding. The Supreme Personality of Godhead himself creates and devours the living beings through other living beings. So let's repeat this. A foolish, senseless person cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although always dependent, he falsely thinks himself the Supreme. If one thinks, according to one's previous fruitive actions, one's material body is created by the father and mother, and the same body is annihilated by another agent, as another animal is devoured by a tiger. That's all in quotes, so this is what we're thinking. This is not the proper understanding. The Supreme Personality of Godhead himself creates and devours the living beings through other living beings. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. According to the conclusion of the philosophy known as Karma Mimamsa, one's karma, or previous fruitive activity, is the cause of everything. And therefore, there is no need to work. Those who arrive at this conclusion are foolish. When a father creates a child, he does not do so independently. He is induced to do so by the Supreme Lord. As the Lord himself says in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 15, text 15, Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishto matta smritir jnanam apohanam cha. I am in everyone's heart, and from me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. Unless one receives dictation from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who sits within everyone's heart, one cannot be induced to create anything. Therefore, the father and mother are not the creators of the living entity. According to the living entity's karma, fruit of activities, he is put into the semen of the father, who injects the living entity into the womb of the mother. Then, according to the body of the mother and father, yatha yoni, yatha bijam, the living entity accepts a body and takes birth to suffer or enjoy. Therefore, the Supreme Lord is the original cause of one's birth. Similarly, the Supreme Lord is the cause of one's being killed. No one is independent. Everyone is dependent. The true conclusion is that the only independent person is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Om Ajnana Timirantasya Jnananjana Shilakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam. Vandeham Shri Guroh Shri Uttaparakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sakrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha. He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute. Saptakanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Haripriye Vanshakalpatrubhyascha Kripasintubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prahunityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivas Adi Gaur Bhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. Avidvanevam atmanam manyate anisham ishwaram. Putai srijati bhutani grasateyatani tai swayam. A foolish, senseless person cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although always dependent, he falsely thinks himself the Supreme. If one thinks, according to one's previous fruit of actions, one's material body is created by the father and mother, and the same body is annihilated by another agent, as another animal is devoured by a tiger, this is not the proper understanding. The Supreme Personality of God himself creates and devours the living beings through other living beings. One of the first things that will come to mind when we hear this, especially the first sentence here, a foolish, senseless person cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although dependent, he falsely thinks himself the Supreme. It brings to mind, at least for me, this verse from Bhagavad Gita chapter 3. Prakrate kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashaha ahankara vimurhatma kartaham iti manyate. The foolish person thinks I'm the doer, but in fact, everything is being carried out by the material nature. But in fact, this verse takes that a step further. Although it's true that everything is being carried out by material nature, maya tyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam hetuna anena bhutani jagad viparivartate. Krishna says, this material nature is working under my direction. So we have a quandary here. We have a problem. If you ascribe to the Lord all the reactions and actions and reactions of fruitive activities, then that makes the Lord responsible for all of our suffering and enjoyment. And if you don't do that, then that makes the Lord irrelevant. So what are we going to do with this? There's a proper understanding being given here. And therefore the acharyas, particularly Sridhar Swami and his commentators, they quote a nice verse from the second canto, chapter 10, text number 12. Dravyam karma chakalascha svabhavo jiva evacha yadanugrahata santi na santi yad apekshaya. That means that all the material ingredients with which we work, all the activities that may be performed by the living entity, the time factor itself, the natures or the modes of one's activity or the natures, the acquired nature that we have developed over time, over so many births in this material world, and the jiva himself, they all exist by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And if he's not inclined to pay attention to them, they don't exist. Very potent verse there from the second canto. So this is the idea that actually Krishna is there, he's in charge. And we learn from Baladeva Vidyabhushana that there are five factors of action. And karma is not the only thing to consider. That is to say, the reactions of our previous work. Ultimately, the Lord is also there. Upadrishtanu mantacha, at least he is the overseer and permitter of any particular action. Not a blade of grass can wave in the breeze without the sanction of the Supreme Lord. This has been described in the third canto by Lord Kapiladev when he's discussing a devotional service to his mother. Beginning with text 37 of the 29th chapter of the third canto, he says, "The time factor which causes the transformations of the various material manifestations is another feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Anyone who does not know that time is the same Supreme Personality, is afraid of the time factor." So we're all afraid of time because time is a great mysterious, all-powerful element that eventually wipes out everything that's near and dear to us. Everyone we know, everything we like, everything we've done, everything we plan. All of our faculties, everything, it's all taken away by this time factor in due course of time. I'm going to continue this because it's very nice and it's central to this point as well. Kapiladev continues instructing his mother, "Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the enjoyer of all sacrifices, is the time factor and the master of all masters. He enters everyone's heart, he is the support of everyone, and he causes every being to be annihilated by another." Same principle that we're hearing in today's verse. "No one is dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, nor is anyone his enemy or friend. But he gives inspiration to those who have not forgotten him, and he destroys those who have. Out of fear of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the wind blows. Out of fear of him, the sun shines. Out of fear of him, the rain pours forth showers. And out of fear of him, the host of heavenly bodies shed their luster. Out of fear of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the trees, creepers, herbs, and seasonal plants and flowers blossom and fructify each in its own season." At least they used to work according to seasons. "Out of fear of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the rivers flow. The ocean never overflows. Out of fear of him only does fire burn, and does the earth, with its mountains, not sink into the water of the universe." In other words, all these beings, they're all performing their dharma. We'll get to that in a moment from Brahma Samhita. Everyone has a dharma to perform. A dharma not to perform, but a dharma that cannot be avoided, because that's the definition of dharma, the intrinsic property of a thing. And he goes on here. He says, "Subject to the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the sky allows outer space to accommodate all the various planets, which hold innumerable living entities. The total universal body expands with its seven coverings under his supreme control. Out of fear of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the directing demigods in charge of the modes of material nature carry out the functions of creation, maintenance, and destruction. Everything animate and inanimate within this world is under their control. The eternal time factor has no beginning and no end. It is the representative of the Supreme Personality, Godhead, the maker of the criminal world." Interesting statement, isn't it? "It brings about the end of the phenomenal world. It carries on the work of creation by bringing one individual into existence from another." Same point we were repeating. "And likewise, it dissolves the universe by destroying even the Lord of Death, Yamaraj." So these are some reflections on the time factor. And we're meant to reflect on this. As long as we don't reflect on these things, we remain in ignorance with the attitude described here. Manyate anisham, I don't have any Lord. Anisham means I don't have a Lord. Ishwaram, I myself am the controller. And it's interesting, Prabhupada kind of fuses these concepts, to be the Lord, to be the controller, and to be independent. They're all kind of like implied here by the word Ishwaram or Aishwaryam. which is a word that's actually used in the following text, text 13, tomorrow's verse, someone is going to tell us about Aishwaryam. Aishwaryam means the state of being the Ishwara, or having power to control. And eventually all these things are taken away. I don't want to spoil a plot here, but it's just a very nice verse in tomorrow's verse. I'll just read it quickly. Ayu, Shri, Kirtir, Aishwaryam, Ashisha, Purushasya. Just as a person not inclined to die must give up his longevity, his opulence, his fame, and everything else at the time of death, so at the appointed time of victory, one can gain all these when the Supreme Lord awards them by his mercy. Remember, this is Vritrasura preaching to Indra at the moment. And he's pointing out that nothing is independent, no one is independent. So these are some things to think about, and Srimad Bhagavatam does advise us to think about these things. In the fifth canto, we hear from Rishabhadev, a very famous verse, Parabhavas tavat abodha jato, yavan nijignyasata atmatatvam, yavat kriyas tavat idam manovai karmatmaka yena sharira bandham. That means that as long as one's knowledge or understanding, one's awakening has not come about, abodhajata, we're all called abodhajatas. Our bodhi, our knowledge has not been born yet. Jata means born. So as long as one remains abodhajata, without proper understanding of who is who and what's what, then everything is defeated, parabhava. Everything is for naught. It's all hopeless. It's dead in the water. Yavan najignasata atmatatvam. And unless one inquires about the truth of the self in this way, then yavat kriyas, as long as we are attached to fruitive activities under the mantle of this ignorance that I am the independent enjoyer and controller, Tavad idam mano vai karmatmaka. Your mind will definitely remain karmatmaka. And how does Prabhupada translate the word karmatmaka? Colored with fruitive activity. As long as the mind is colored with this desire or attachment or absorption in fruitive activity, yena sharira bandham, that long we will have to take another material body. So this is the great mission of human life. This is preliminary to Krishna consciousness, because Krishna consciousness really begins from the Brahma-Bhuta platform, the platform of having realized oneself to be Brahma, spirit, in essence. That understanding, that realization of Brahman is predicated on the understanding of what we're not, and on the understanding of what the nature of spirit is. And we don't have these things. So this knowledge is necessary, atma-tattvam, by which we can become bodhajata, awakened. That's the real defining feature of a human being. Back to Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, text 37. Yathai thangsi samidhognir bhasmasat kuritarjuna, he tells Arjuna. Jnanagni sarvakarmani bhasmasat kuritetatha. Just as fire burns to ashes firewood, so in the same way, this knowledge, it will burn to ashes any of our previous notions and any of our previous activities and the reactions that stem from those activities. It can all be burned to ashes if we simply awaken knowledge. Therefore, we're encouraged. Many times throughout the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna encourages. He says, even among the bhaktas, that person who has awakened his knowledge, he's superior. Otherwise, we remain komala shraddhas. They're called komala shraddha, means somebody whose faith is soft and pliable, and he can be swayed by a good argument or by bad association. Even if he has good intelligence, he can be corrupted. It's possible. And if we don't believe it, then we'll have to hang around and experience it. Because that's definitely coming down the tubes if we choose to hang around. So, therefore Krishna concludes, this knowledge is very necessary, and in chapter 7, text 19, Bahunam janmanam ante gnanavan mam prapadyate vasudeva sarvamiti. In this verse we have one iti. What does the iti mean? It's a quote. It means, I'm thinking myself anisham ishwaram, the Lord without any other master. But the real thing is that one has to consider himself to be a part, tiny part and parcel of Vasudeva. Vasudeva is everything. I'm just his servant. Samahatma sadurlabha, Krishna says. That kind of mahatma is very rare. Now in Brahma Samhita, we have very nice statements there. Since we're talking about Indra, or rather Vrtrasura here is talking to Indra, let's see what Brahma Samhita has to say about this. Yas tu Indra gopam athavendra mohosva karma bandhan rupa phalabhajanam atnoti karmani nirdahati kintu cha bhakti bhajam govindam adi purusham tamaham bhajami. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda who burns up to their roots all fruitive activities of those who are imbued with devotion and impartially ordains for each the due enjoyment of the fruits of one's activities. Of or for all those who walk in the path of work in accordance with a chain of their previously performed works. No less in the case of the tiny insect called Indragopa than in that of Indra, the king of the devas. So whether you're Indra or whether you're an Indragopa, is a play on words here. Indragopa is like a tiny little germ. And Indra, on the other hand, is pretty much the topmost of all beings because the demigods are considered the most superior in material birth, and Indra is the king of the demigods. And evidently the lowest birth conceivable is that of an Indragopa germ. So whether you're Indra or an Indragopa, you have to undergo the fruits of your previously performed activities. Swakarma bandhanurupa. In other words, karmatmaka yena sharira bandham, as we've already described. So everybody has to suffer and enjoy in this way. But there is an exception. Who is the exception? The person who is bodhajata, the person who has awakened his knowledge and has matured in that knowledge and is therefore really surrendered to Krishna. Let's hear about this person now. He says, in the purport, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he very nicely points out, God impartially induces the fallen souls to act in the way that is consequent on the deeds of their previous births and enjoy the fruition of their labors. But out of his great mercy to his devotees, he purges out by the fire of ordeal the root of all karma, namely nescience and evil desires. Karma, although without beginning, is still perishable. The karma of those who work with the hope of enjoying the fruits of their labors becomes everlasting and endless and is never destroyed. Interesting. So for the devotee, the person who has no attachment to, no personal agenda within the realm of karma, for that person, the fruits and the sinful reactions of his previous work, it's all burnt up. It may not be so for someone who's attached to karma, still. Who maintains that attachment? It may not be so. We don't know. Sometimes Krishna burns it up, sometimes he doesn't. That is a function of his mercy, and that's the pivotal principle in these verses that we're discussing today. When the Lord wants to give you mercy, as we read in the Bhagavatam, I'll read it again. Just as a person not inclined to die must nonetheless give up his longevity, opulence, fame, and everything else at the time of death, so at the appointed time of victory, one can gain all these when the Supreme Lord awards them by his mercy. This is what Vritrasura is preaching to Indra. You may win or you may lose. Either way, it's not just about you and your karma. The Supreme Lord has a hand in this. And for a devotee, we can see, the Brahma Samhita is telling us, how does he work? How the hand of God is working. He purges out all the reactions of our previous deeds by the fire of ordeal. And he purges out through that suffering, through the intensity of ordeal, he purges out our nescience and our evil desires. We're forced into a place where we have to give those notions up. Otherwise, the suffering becomes too overwhelming and we go crazy. And sometimes people do. So this is the beauty of Krishna consciousness. Just by surrendering to Krishna in this way, we can overcome this karma and we can we can regain our immortality. I wanted to read, in addition to this, because it kind of is related, there was one Vyas Puja offering that was made by a devotee. I don't know who he is, someone in Australia, it seems. And he wrote about some things with regards to the time factor and karma and some of the things that are mentioned in this verse. It's very nice. He's writing to Srila Prabhupada. He says, 40 years in Krishna consciousness has been an amazing adventure. Throughout that time, I've experienced all the ups and downs of life, the good and the bad, the ecstasy and the pain. At 17, I was naive and probably a little, more than a little arrogant. Like most young people, I had the mistaken idea that I was special and destined for great things. Yet one by one, all of my dreams and aspirations, even to be a great devotee, have failed. At 57, I now understand that life ends in defeat for everyone. This is the Prabhava factor that we were mentioning earlier. We can possess nothing that is not ultimately taken away. I imagine this must be extremely difficult for anyone not in Krishna consciousness. What would a non-devotee have left once he has lost his youth, intelligence, strength, beauty, and in the final stages, his ability to digest food, his mobility, his memory, hearing, eyesight, etc.? Our situation is an extremely fearful one. I'm now experiencing that material life is actually about nothing but loss. But isn't that what you told us all those years ago? Dear Srila Prabhupada, what you brought to the West in 1965 was not another religion, a vague hope based upon sentiment, but the remedy to all of life's problems, for we are struggling in material existence only due to forgetfulness of our relationship with the Supreme Absolute Truth, Lord Sri Krishna. Knowing this and understanding that we have no other recourse but the shelter of the Lord makes all the difference. For through your expert guidance, the more we suffer and the more we are able to focus on the goal of life, ultimately becoming free from all anxiety. You have taught us that real success is based on one thing, remembering the Lord at all times in thought, word, and deed. This is indeed your gift to the world. I'll stop here, but there's just a couple of points I wanted to mention. That in this verse we have two words. We have the word Atma and the word Bhuta. In this verse, the word Atma refers to the living entity himself. And the word Bhuta in this verse refers to other living entities. These same two words were used in the previous text, yesterday's verse, text number 11. Does anyone remember what they meant there? Atma meant the false ego, and Bhuta meant the material elements, such as earth, water, fire, air, etc. This is the subtlety of the Sanskrit language. Even from one verse to the next, the very same word may mean something else. How do we know what it means? We have no idea what it means except through the commentaries given by predecessor acharyas, such as in today's verse, Srila Prabhupada's translation as well as his commentary. They're both based primarily on the commentaries of Sridhar Swami, and even his word for word generally, because commentaries usually just gloss or give a synonym for the meaning of what the word is in that particular context. Now, I wanted to mention, because the world is now much more unfortunate than it was a few days ago, because we've lost one of our dearmost elder god brothers and certainly the foremost Sanskrit scholar of ISKCON, His Grace Gopi Paranadhana Prabhu. It was him who taught me the importance of and the usage of commentarial Sanskrit. So if I can even give this class today, it's really because of his mercy upon me. And I just wanted to say a few words in his honor. Of course, those of you who knew Gopi Paranadhana, you know very much that although he was brilliant beyond comprehension sometimes, I found that it seemed that there was no topic on which he wasn't surprisingly conversant, whether it was auto mechanics, molecular biology, computer programming, or Sanskrit. And he was able to speak on these topics in Chinese, in Russian, in Kannada, in Sanskrit, in Hindi, in English, adi, etc., etc., etc. It's just a brilliant intellect, just a shining star amongst scholars, and yet he was so unassuming and so humble and low-key that no one would ever know it. Last time when he came here about a year ago, I went to visit him in the Brahmachari Ashram where he was staying in a humble room there, and he was in anxiety trying to figure out how to do his laundry because no one was even taking care of him, despite his august position. He was that unassuming that he just didn't demand that kind of respect. So he had so many virtues and so many wonderful, endearing Vaishnava qualities. When I first arrived in Govardhan, he personally was trying to lug a heavy metal trunk up these steep stairs in Govardhan for me, despite the fact that he suffered from asthma until I stopped him from doing it. That was his spontaneous desire to serve like that. Humility, of all of his qualities, maybe humility was the best, or at least the foremost. But he had many others, and it was his virtue, really, that outshined his learning, because the real fruit of learning and the real symptom of learning is that one has these wonderful Vaishnava qualities that he definitely embodied. So it's going to be a long, long time, I think, before we see anyone else who can really fill his shoes. There just really isn't anyone. I have discussed this at length with many, many leading devotees in this movement about the project of the completion of Jiva Goswami Satsandarbhas, which is what Gopi Padmanabhan Prabhu was working on at the time of his death. And we couldn't even find anyone who was competent to edit that book, those portions which were already done. And I think he was probably about halfway done with that by now. What to speak of translating it. There just isn't anyone comparable to Gopi Padmanabhan. So it's a very sad day, but one of the things that I wanted to mention with regards to today's verse is that he put emphasis on, I mean, he embodied fidelity to the spiritual master and to serving his words. There was a very nice article that I will recommend you all to read that Gopi Padmanabhan Prabhu wrote. It's in the ISKCON Communications Journal, Volume 8, Number 2. That's from July of 2000. And it's entitled Srila Prabhupada and the Vaishnava Tradition of Scriptural Commentary, Serving the Words of His Predecessors. There he kind of outlines all the principles of Vedic scholarship that he himself embodied. And as I said, his very essence was fidelity to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada's ideals, Srila Prabhupada's philosophical siddhanta, and certainly Srila Prabhupada's BBT. And he was an ISKCON man through and through. He was a Prabhupada man, if there ever was one. This was his glory. His devotion was at least as deep as his knowledge was vast, and maybe more so, we don't know. But Krishna blessed him. He was coming from Poland just a day or so before, and he was due to fly out to China maybe by today or just a couple of days later. And right when he was there at Govardhan, Krishna took him. So he left his body. He left this world from Govardhan, of all places. We like to think that he went straight back to Godhead. I'm sure he did, unless Srila Prabhupada had some other assignment waiting for him, which is probable because Gopi Padmanabhan Prabhu, if anyone, could represent Srila Prabhupada in any world as well as he did in this one. But I'm sure he went back to Godhead because, in fact, he already lived there. Simply put, he's been a resident of Govardhan for 15 years, and his Krishna consciousness was everything that I would want mine to be. So today, at least, and in the future, and I'm sure they'll be observing his disappearance day in times to come. I'm told that there's plans underway to put a small marker in his memory at Govardhan itself. That was his desire. So devotees can go and pay their obeisances unto him. great soul whose loss is going to be very sorely felt for a long time. So I'll stop right there. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Shachi Tanoi Prabhu, I'll try to repeat your question unless the microphone comes sooner.
Using the same line of this verse, it says that a foolish person might think like this. So a foolish person might think that the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Father, is a little bit cruel and tyrannic because he's demanding surrender at any price. And even to the point that you were reading, the demigods, they do this out of fear.
Yeah.
The demigods do this out of fear.
Yeah, I was thinking that when we were reading that passage. It does sound almost Judeo-Christian, doesn't it?
Exactly. So then I was leading the question to the saying, other doctrines, they challenge you and say, well, how merciful that could be. Although they themselves, they have eternal damnation. But sometimes in counteracting, they say, well, what's more painful, they say, you know, they turn the ball back to you. What's more painful that actually suffering after suffering and birth after birth, it appears like for millions of years.
Yeah.
So that was my question. A foolish might think we have a father that is tyrannic, too demanding,
and
it's unfair. Yeah. So
this is a good question. It's a very good question. It's relevant for many, many people. But, you know, one of the primary characteristics, and as this Prabhu in his Vyasa Puja offering wrote, I think his name is Yadavendu, you know, Prabhupada's contribution to the world of religion was that he gave us this fundamental principle, this substrate of any spiritual understanding, which is the simple realization that you are not this body. And that's why, one reason why I wanted to emphasize that, you know, Atma Tattva principle and the Abodha Jata principle. As long as we remain ignorant of our true identity as spiritual beings, then the Shastra says we're really no better than animals. And on the animalistic platform, the animal is only able to perceive a stick, a man with a stick. That's what he's able to perceive. And it's for the animals that these kinds of, among human beings, two-legged animals we can say, it's for them that these instructions are very frightening. Again, as long as we do not recognize, according to Kapila, that the time factor is the same Supreme Personality of Godhead, that long we will remain afraid of it. But if we always keep in the forefront and remind ourselves that we are not this body, and if Krishna is demanding surrender, what is he really demanding? He's not demanding anything other than for us to act in our natural capacity as spirit souls, in the way that will satisfy us. Every other option that he may be taking away from us, cruelly or unfairly, it's really something that's going to cause us to suffer. So by the grace of Srila Prabhupada only, we can have this appreciation. I don't know of any other spiritual teacher, including even Vaishnavas, who emphasized this crucial, this pivotal fact as much as Srila Prabhupada did on every single page of his books, practically speaking. We find him quoting in full the whole verse, Dehi no smin yatha dehe, komaram yovanam jara, tatha dehantara praptir, tiras tatra namohyati. The sober person is not bewildered, even though the body goes through these changes. Is that okay?
Could you mention something about the conversation that you had with Gopi Paranadana one time when you have a little doubt about some point in the philosophy, and then he clarified?
Thank you for reminding me of that. It's also related to today's point. Today's point is that everything comes by the mercy, ultimately, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Either our suffering or our enlightenment, our material opulence or our material loss, it's all coming through his mercy. And it's, you know, that's one thing. And then the second thing is that, you know, we were talking about Vaishnava qualities, and particularly those that Gopi Paranadana was, you know, that he embodied. Some years ago, I had some appreciation, at least theoretical appreciation, for the necessity of empathy in Krishna consciousness, because in chapter 6, text 32, Krishna says the best yogi, he thinks, is the person who can empathize with others. So I was, after meditating on this for some months, I asked Gopi Puranadana Prabhu, I said, where does this empathy actually come from? Because it doesn't seem to be any kind of sadhana that you can practice to get this insight into what another person is thinking or feeling or willing or where he's coming from. And any preacher knows that that's pretty much the first thing you have to do in order to establish any kind of relationship with a person. You have to get a sense of where he's coming from. So I asked him this, where does it come from? And he just said it's a gift from above. It's a gift from God. It's a blessing. So again, we've come full circle here that this is the idea of today's verse. It's not just a question of our karma or anything that we can do really to gain whatever it is we want or to avoid anything that we don't want, but bhutai srishati bhutani grasate tani tai swayam. The Lord himself does this. He creates the bhutas, he has them eat each other, and he ultimately eats them all. The Upanishad says, even Lord Brahma and Shiva, they're nothing but the Lord's rice and pickle. He ultimately enjoys himself within himself. He's the only real enjoyer. So all these wonderful qualities, they come from him, by his mercy. And that mercy usually, as we know, it comes to the devotees, particularly the spiritual master. Is that okay? Enjoy. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.